ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಹರಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರಿ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರಿ ಹರಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶುಂಜವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯಾದೀಶತಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನಶಲಾಕಯ ಸಾಕ್ಷಿರು ಮಿಲಿತಾಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಓಕೆ, ಸೊ ರೀಡಿಂಗ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ದಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಚೈತಾಮೃತ. ವಿ ಆರ್ ರೀಡಿಂಗ್ ಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ 277-281. That was the instruction, and also we'll speak a few words about Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur. I wish Pushkar was around, because I remember when he gave his classes on the Chaitanya Bhagavat in Hawaii. You know, it was a Zoom class. He did it for like maybe 2-3 years. We read the whole Chaitanya Bhagavat. And he knows very well the Bengali, and he can actually speak way, way much better than I can. But anyway, We're just a few devotees here. I know most of you are going to go to the Ratha Yatra, like myself. I'm planning to go there, so we'll try to make it short and sweet. All right, so reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, text number 277. Satwa tatwa mili shri chila brahmandira gana ananta brahmanda taranak nahika ganana. Combining all the different elements, the Supreme Lord created all the universes. Those universes are unlimited in number. There is no possibility of counting them. Text number 278. Inho Mahashasta Purusha Mahavishnu Nama Ananta Brahmanda Tandra Loma Kupedama. The first form of Lord Vishnu is called Mahavishnu. He is the original creator of the total material energy. The innumerable universes emanate from the pores of his body. Text number 279 and 280. There are no purports in these verses. Gavakshe udiya jayche renuase yaya Purusha nishwasa saha brahmanda bahiraya Punarapi nishwasa saha jaya vyantara Ananta iswarya tanrasava maya para. These universes are understood to be floating in the air that Mahavishnu exhales. They are like atomic particles that float in sunshine and pass through the holes of a screen. All these universes are thus created by the exhalation of Mahavishnu. And when Mahavishnu inhales, they re-enter his body. The unlimited opulences of Mahavishnu are completely beyond material conception. And the last verse for today will be text number 281. Jasyaka nishwasita kalam atabalambya jivanti loma vilaja jagatandanattaha Vishnur mahamsa iha jasya kalavishyashu Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Translation. The Brahmas and other lords of the mundane worlds appear from the pores of Mahavishnu and remain alive for the duration of his one exhalation. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom Mahavishnu is a portion of a plenary portion. I would appreciate if someone could bring me a glass of water. Just some water. Thank you. So Prabhupada mentions here in the purport that this is a quotation from the Brahma Samhita 548. For an explanation, refer to Adilila, chapter 5, verse 71. So I'm going to get the Adilila, volume 1, chapter 5, text 71, and I'll read it for you again. The Brahmas and other lords of the mundane worlds appear from the pores of Mahavishnu and remain alive for the duration of his one exhalation. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom Mahavishnu is a portion of the primary portion. Purport. The description of the Lord's creative energy is from the Brahma Samhita 548, which Lord Brahma compiled after his personal realization. When Mahavishnu exhales, the spiritual seeds of the universes emanate from him in the form of molecular particles like those that are visible, 3 times the size of an atom. When sunlight is diffused through a small hole, in these days of atomic research, it will be a worthwhile engagement for atomic scientists to learn from this statement how the entire creation develops from the spiritual atoms emanating from the body of the Lord. Om Mahayana Kamiranda Shyagana Yena Shalakya Chakshun Kam Yena Taisma Shiva. So, we'll just say a few words concerning this. First of all, this verse reminds me of the beautiful passage story from Sri Sariputta's book, Sariputta Prabhu's book, Vedic Astrology and Cosmology, where he tells the story about the our Brahma with four heads goes to see Krishna. And Lord Brahma arrives at the doors, at the gates, and he says, tell the Lord that Lord Brahma is here to see him. So the guard goes inside and tells Krishna, Lord Brahma is here to see you. And Krishna says, Lord Brahma, which Brahma is coming to see me? So the guard goes back to Lord Brahma and says, the Lord says, which Lord Brahma are you? He says, what do you mean, which Lord Brahma? I am Lord Brahma. What is this all about? He says, well, no, he's asking, which Lord Brahma are you? I am Lord Brahma. And Krishna comes and says, yes, you are the Lord Brahma with four heads, but I see that you are the Lord Brahma with four heads, but there are many other Brahmas. And he says, other Brahmas? He says, yes, there are other Brahmas. It's like what Prabhupada is saying, well, the translation of the verses, the Brahmas, not the Brahma, but the Brahmas in plural, and other lords of the mundane worlds. And at that time, Sariputta says in his book, that Lord Krishna, by his mystic potency, called all the Brahmas from all the universes, and some of them had 8 heads, some had 100 heads, some had 10 heads. There were so many Brahmas that came, and when they came and offered their obeisances to the floor, prostrated obeisances, the sound that they created was tumultuous. Tumultuous sound. It was like the Big Bang. It was a huge sound. And then Lord Brahma woke up and realized that there were other Brahmas that are managing the affairs of other universes that may have more than 4 dimensions. There could be 8 dimensions, 10 dimensions. There are universes that have 100 dimensions. And that blew his mind. So that's a very interesting story from Sariputta Prabhu's book, because Sariputta was really into the conception of the observer and the fact that we live in a multidimensional universe. And so a lot of people think that this universe that we see is all there is, 4 dimensions. So I remember recently there was a class sponsored by the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And I don't remember the name of this devotee, but this devotee was speaking about Sariputta Prabhu, how he had made an appointment with Sariputta, and because Sariputta wanted to explain to him that we live in a multidimensional universe, and it's based on the observer's position to understand this multidimensional universe. So he says, I'll meet you on 14th Street and Green tomorrow at 12 noon. So the devotee went there at the cross of 12th and Green. I think it was in San Diego where he used to live. And he waited and waited and waited, and Sariputta Prabhu didn't come. So at the time, back in the 80s, there were no cell phones, so he couldn't call him and find out where he was. So he went home. Later on in the afternoon, he calls him and says, Sariputta Prabhu, I was waiting for you on the corner of 12th and Green, as we agreed, and you were not there. What happened to you? He said, I was there. He said, really? I didn't see you. I was there too. He said, yes, I was on 12th and Green, but on the 5th floor of the building on that cross street. Which means that there was another dimension that this devotee was not paying attention to, which was the height. There is width, there is length, but there is also height. So there are different dimensions that we have to pay attention to. And there are, of course, different brahmas that are in charge of this multidimensional system. So let us go on here and talk a little bit farther down. It says that the mundane worlds appear from the pores of Mahavishnu. That brings us into the position as to who is Mahavishnu. All right. So we're going to just come back up a few verses before that. Actually, it will be explained later in the Madhya Lila. But basically, anyway, Mahavishnu is actually an expansion of Sankarsana. Sankarsana, who is an expansion of Lord Balaram as well. So Sankarsana, as you know, there is Vasudev, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. So from Sankarsana, Mahavishnu emanates. And Mahavishnu lies in the Karana ocean. And from there he is creating all these different universes. Now, the Karana ocean, we do have a little experience about what the Karana ocean is, or what it, how it manifests, or what the qualities are, as later on says in the Adi Lila, that we find that, it says here on text number 54, the water of the Karana ocean, which is the original cause, is therefore spiritual. The sacred Ganges, which is but a drop of it, purifies the fallen souls. Okay? The sacred Ganges. Now, the Ganges may seem like an ordinary river, but it is not. It is an amazing river. Amazing. Amazing water. I remember when I was in Rishikesh once, exactly in 2011, I took a group of people from Hawaii, at the time we used to live there. I took about 15 people who wanted to do a little sightseeing of India. These were not devotees, they were just friends. And so we took them to Rishikesh. When I was in Rishikesh, one of them decided to go on a white water raft and go down the Himalayas and go down towards Rishikesh. So we went. We rented a car with a boat and went all the way into the Himalayas, and then we came down the river. It was October. It was very nice weather. It was amazing. When you touch the water of the Ganges, it's just another world. I mean, the Ganges, truly speaking, I couldn't really personally believe what I was experiencing, because I've been to many rivers. I've swum in the ocean. And I've swum in many different rivers as well, or visited rivers all over the world, actually. But the Ganges, when you touch the Ganges, if you are in touch with the Ganges, you realize that this is Mother Ganga that is right there. Everything becomes spiritual. All of a sudden, I start seeing all my life. It's like going through my mind, like, oh my God. It's like, I've done all of these things. I better get moving. I better become more purified in my existence. I could see how much I needed to purify myself in my existence in order to reach the destination of Goloka Vrindavan. I realized that the Ganges was giving me that insight about my life and also what I needed to do in order to get closer to Krishna. So the Ganges is not an ordinary river. It really isn't. And everything that happens when you are swimming or touching the Ganges or are by the Ganges, if you just take a walk around Rishikesh along the shores of the Ganges, is like very, a lot of things will happen that you can see, that you can get insights about your life and about the story of the universe. Anyway, so I wanted to mention that the sacred Ganges, the reason why that happens is because as it says here on the Adi Lila, chapter 5, text 54, the Ganges is but a drop of the Karana ocean. A drop of the Karana. Can you imagine that? A drop of the Karana ocean. And what is the Karana ocean? It's the ocean where Mahavishnu is lying, is reclining. And all the universes are coming out of his pores, out of his breath, when he's emanating universes by breathing. So, in that ocean lies a plenary portion of Lord Sankarshan, a plenary portion. So, Mahavishnu is just a plenary portion of that Sankarshan. He's known as the first Purusha, the creator of the total material energy. He's the cause of the universe, the first incarnation, cast his glance over Maya. I remember when I was in college and I just first met the devotees and I got this book, I believe it was the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Mahavishnu is lying on the causal ocean looking at Durga Devi and with his glance, looking at Maya, Durga Devi, is creating, is actually putting into motion the whole material creation. It says here that the first incarnation cast his glance over Maya. His glance. So, and then the universe is put into motion, which is what? Is basically what it creates is an illusion, right? It's an illusion of reality because it is a temporary world. It's a place where the jivas, the living entities, come to this world to experience what it is to live in the material world. You wanted to be in the material world? Okay, here it is. So Krishna puts you through his glance into this material world, and then you live into this illusion. So how are illusions created and what is an illusion? Well, an illusion is that which is not real, right? And it was interesting that I encountered this painting of the Mahavishnu looking at Durga because I was a student of film at the time, film semiology. And I realized, whoa, this is the same thing as films. This is what a film is. It's an illusion. And this is what the material world is. It's an illusion. And I studied films as to, actually, what I studied was, my thesis in college was, what kind of consciousness does a film create? And it's somewhere between hypnosis and dream. It's an illusion. And the first lesson that this professor in Paris, France, they gave me a scholarship from Berkeley to go to study with these great professors at La Sorbonne. And the first lesson he gave, he says, all films are an illusion. Because you are seeing a three-dimensional world into a two-dimensional world. So there is an illusion, something that is not real, that is being created. But it seems like it is real. So how is that created? By two identifications, and that's what we study. There are two identifications of the spectator to the film. One is the identification of the spectator with the camera, that eye that can see everything and that can fly, can go everywhere, can go through a peephole or go through windows. So the identification with that camera. And second, the identification of the spectator with the character of the film. That's why when Chaitanya Charan was giving his class about 3 weeks ago here on a Saturday, he was saying how empathy, to empathize with the character, is very, very important. To empathize, right? And so in a film, that's what happens when the spectator empathizes with the character, when he becomes identified with him, then it creates a state of consciousness, which is an hypnosis. So what happens here in the creation of the material world is the same thing. In order to create this illusion, the illusion can be created, and it's only created, by these two identifications. Identifications with what? Well, with the creation. What is it? First identification is the identification of the soul as the spirit that comes into this material world with the Maya. With Maya. And we identify with the Maya, this huge creation with planets, constellations, the sun. You know, when we were living in Hawaii, we used to have this beautiful house overlooking the ocean. And I would go out in the morning and chant my rounds at 4 in the morning. I could see all the constellations and the moon. Sometimes the moon would be in Leo, or you could see Orion, you could see Gemini, Dashvini Kumars, Gemini. You can see them, beautiful stars. You can see all these constellations. So this identification of the soul with this Maya is the first identification. And the second one is the identification of the soul with the pradana, with the material elements. The more you identify with the pradana and with the Maya, the more you are in this state of consciousness, which is material consciousness. It's not Krishna consciousness, because you are identifying with the Maya. So now what happens here? What happens when someone like Srila Prabhupada comes and tells us, oh, wait a second, you know, this is not all there is, there is more to it. Well, we also can understand what happens from films. In a film is the theory of film, or how films were created, is nothing new. This is something, a very, very old story. It comes from a philosopher named Plato, who Prabhupada actually analyzed and criticized in this book. He criticized, or he did an analysis, so to speak, of different philosophers on the Western tradition, and it was published as Beyond Illusion and Doubt. It was also published as Dialectic Spiritualism. And they're basically questions by the voices, specifically Shyamasundar Prabhu. So, in this case, the history of film starts with the story from The Republic by Plato. Plato wrote a book, a treaty called The Republic. And Shyamasundar, this is actually the story of film. At the time, I didn't know. I mean, nobody even knew what this was about. But Shyamasundar, who studied philosophy, he knew exactly what was happening. So he was asking these questions to Srila Prabhupada. And he said, this is actually the history of films, how films were created. In a very famous allegory in The Republic, Plato describes representatives of humanity chained in a dark cave and able to see only shadows cast by the light of the fire. See, the shadows created by the light of the fire that are projected into on the walls of the cave, that is creating that illusion. And the spectators, so to speak, they are just an illusion and they are just immobile. They cannot go anywhere. So now, he says, one person breaks free and sees the outside world, and he returns to the cave to tell the people there that they are living in darkness, but the cave dwellers consider them crazy. So Prabhupada said, this is just like our story of Dr. Frog. He had never gone out of his dark world, so he thought, he is everything. When he was told about the vast Atlantic Ocean, he could not conceive of a body of water so expansive. Now, if you think about it, even as devotees, even if you are a Krishna conscious devotee and you have been studying the philosophy for so many years and chanting for so many years, still, you think about it, we are really small. Our brains are so small. How can we comprehend the vastness of the material creation? The creation is huge. Mahavishnu is like beyond our understanding, it's beyond our belief, so to speak. It's just such a fantastic and immense power. So we have to think from that point of view that we are actually very, very small, and the power of Krishna is very, very big. And the only thing in areas of God consciousness, the only thing we can do is be very humble. Be very humble in front of this huge, big power, because we are just such little entities and we don't really have any power. So, now, but Srila Prabhupada keeps explaining here how I explained the Maya and the Pradana, and it also says that because Prakriti, the actual material energy, is dull and inert, it cannot actually be the cause of the material world. But Lord Krishna shows his mercy by infusing his energy into the dull, inert material nature. Thus, Prakriti, by the energy of Lord Krishna, becomes the secondary cause, just as iron becomes red hot by the energy of fire. Therefore, Lord Krishna is the original cause of the cosmic manifestation. Prakriti is like the nipples on the neck of a goat, for they cannot give any milk. Just as the original cause of an earthen pot is the potter, so the creator of the material world is the first Purusha incarnation. So you can just imagine how powerful Krishna is.
Well, actually, you cannot even imagine. It's just beyond our imagination. But when I was in high school, I used to teach sometimes, you know, they would put me to teach different classes. I was just a teacher and substitute teacher. So sometimes I was a substitute teacher, although sometimes I was teaching for a few months a specific subject. But in this case, they wanted me to teach science, the creation of planet Earth. So I showed the movie to the students, and then we had a discussion. And basically, the current scientific thought, we really are not against it. Saraputta Prabhu himself was not against this. The original conception that the Earth planet was a huge red fiery hot planet. Okay. And then there was another planet. This is what is taught in high school at the universities as well, in college. But another planet called Theia came and struck planet Earth. And from this big explosion, the moon came out. That's how the moon was created. So the moon actually was, according to this scientific theory, and this is what is being taught today, came from planet Earth. And so it is also said that because of this explosion, it tilted the Earth in such a way that the scientists say, by magic, it created the seasons. By magic. So I tell the students, by magic. So there is no explanation why. It created the seasons, but it happens that the seasons are perfect. It happens that the sun arises every morning at the perfect time and the sunsets at the perfect time. Have you ever seen the sun arise late or early? Have you ever seen the sun going into the sunset late? No, it's always, in fact, we set our watches, our clocks, by the sun. The sun is always perfect, moving perfectly in the horizon. So, because of the seasons, we have vegetation. Because of vegetation, we have vegetables. Because of vegetables, we can eat. Because we can eat and develop. Humans can create societies. Because of these, not only humans, but also other living entities, they can develop relationships of love. So, it is not just by chance that these things are created. Of course, the scientists, they don't want to go that far. They don't want to talk about if some mystical power actually created the universe or how the Earth was created. But we do know that this had to be arranged. It was all design. It's all by design. It's not by chance. So how, who created this? Well, as we are studying here and also we are studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Lord Brahma is the one who is creating these universes because he's getting the knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And how is Krishna doing that? How is Krishna creating all these universes and infusing all these energies? He working very hard. Here in the West we have this idea of Atlas, carrying the world in his shoulders like a very heavy planet. Or is Krishna a very old man with a beard? You know, I guess Michelangelo, he was a very, very good artist, great painter. But what did he know really? I mean, well, maybe that is a conception that God can be an old man that has a beard. But the conception that we follow is the one that brought Srila Prabhupada, which makes the most sense to me, which is that Krishna is just playing on his flute. As you probably have seen the cover of the Brahma Samhita, on the cover you see Krishna is playing on his flute, and from the sound of his flute enters into the ear of Lord Brahma, and then all the knowledge of the Vedas are revealed by the sound of Krishna's flute. So that's all he's doing. He's just playing on his flute and he's creating all the universes. So when Krishna plays beautiful, beautiful music, he is actually creating the universe. He's creating us. He is giving us life, so to speak. So actually the music that Krishna plays is pure life. So let me recite. This is the text. The text from chapter 5 from the Brahma Samhita 5.1. Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachitananda Vigra Anadira Dir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and he is the prime cause of all causes. That is Krishna. Now, in relationship to what we were saying, because the teachings from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they kind of mirror the teachings of the Brahma Samhita, which was brought to Bengal by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He found the Brahma Samhita, I believe, in a temple in South India, and he brought that, the original text that he found. So, here is text number 10 in relationship to what we were talking about, the glance of Mahavishnu. 5.10, the person embodying the material cause principle, the great lord of this mundane world, Maheshwara, Shambhu, in the form of the male generating organ, is joined to his female consort, the limited energy, Maya, as the efficient causal principle. The lord of the world, Mahavishnu, is manifesting him by his subjective portion in the form of his glands. So the glands of Vishnu is not nothing. It's actually a person, and that person is what text number 10 is saying. It's Maheshwara, is Lord Shiva, Shambhu. The glands, that the personification of the glands of Vishnu. So actually, the glands of Vishnu is Vishnu, is part of Vishnu, is non-separate from Vishnu, is the glands. Actually, as well, when just as another example, when I was studying film in college, these professors that I was taking classes from, they were following a psychologist, his name was Jacques Lacan. And Jacques Lacan is probably the father of all contemporary psychology and semiology. And basically he wrote a treaty which is called La Regard, L'Objet Petita, which is Le Regard, the look, is actually an object. That's what he's saying. In order to create consciousness in the world, there has to be the look of the spectator, the look of the human. When we are looking at something, that look is an actual object, L'Objet Petita, is an object. But that object is subject to illusion. That's what it is. In the material world, it's subject to illusion. But in the spiritual world, in the real world, that object is not an object, it's actually a person. That's the person, Shiva, which comes from Vishnu. It's actually connected to Vishnu. It's the glance of Vishnu. And that glance is the one that impregnates the Maya, the material energy. And that's how everything comes into motion. That's how we come into play. So what does the bottom line, what is the conclusion of this? That in a sense, what we are living here is in a sense a film. It's a movie. All these relationships, all these facts. You know, as you grow older, you realize, well, when I look at photos that I have here in my iPhone when I was 5 years old and 7 years old and 12 and 20 and 45, or if you see the dioramas that we'll see later at the Ratha Yatra, or when we go to the book table, we have this diorama and we explain to people how they are going from, you know, from babyhood to youth to old age, and finally how you pass on to the next body. Actually, you realize that, well, this is like a film. It's like a movie. And I'm developing all these relationships, and I'm connecting to this world through this glance, through this the look. But ultimately, it is, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's going to be an illusion. Why? Because it's not real. Why is it not real? Prabhupada said it's a temporary reality. In other words, it's fleeting. It just comes and goes. And this reality, it disappears very, very quickly from our sight. Before you know it, you know, I thought that I was invincible. Not just before I became a devotee, because I used to be a college basketball player in college. You know, I used to play basketball, very tall, strong. Then when I became a devotee, well, I really thought that I was invincible. Like, I didn't take any drugs, I follow four regulative principles, you think you can do anything, you don't even need to sleep, except unless the authorities, like Devamrita Maharaj, he used to tell me, because I mean, I was always doing something, and I was on Sankirtan, and Devamrita Maharaj, she said, Mahesh, you can go on like that, you have to take rest. But Maharaj, I'm very excited, you know, I'm chanting my rounds, and then I want to read books, and then I want to go on Sankirtan. He said, no. You got to take rest, because if you don't take rest, then you will not perform your service properly. So he is the one who taught me that you need to, there is times to do action, and there is times where you got to go into Nidra Yoga. So following the advice of Devamrita Maharaj, I learned that sometimes you have to force yourself into taking rest, because if you don't take rest, then you will burn out. You will not be able to perform your service properly. So that is something that I had to learn the hard way. But as Maharaj said also, that I'm from the school of hard knocks. So I did a lot of things. I fell, I hurt myself, and then I got up just like a kid. And then I keep running. So that's what this world is about. You just have to keep running. But you have to listen to authority. You have to follow certain authorities that have more knowledge and information than you do. And that's why the surrender to spiritual master is very, very important. Surrender to the scriptures, surrender to the teachings, because through these teachings we can develop that relationship with Krishna, that empathy with Krishna consciousness. And if you develop that relationship, I don't know how it happened, but by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, you can actually get a glimpse of the spiritual world. This is something that I have experienced myself. If you read certain chapters of the Krishna book, for me, really, the whole Bhagavatam is summarized in those chapters of the Krishna book from chapter 21 through 26. You know, if you read those chapters, the whole world is revealed, the whole spiritual world is revealed. It's really amazing what happens. But you can really empathize with Krishna. You can see you can see the spiritual world as it is. If you connect to Krishna consciousness, you develop a momentum by which you can do things that otherwise would not be possible. Like the things that Srila Prabhupada did, they're really not possible for any 80-year-old person to do. It's just not possible. Who can do that? Is anybody doing anything like that? No, nobody can do that. But he was connected with Krishna. At 80 years old, he was managing an association or group of 10,000 people, traveling all over the world, building 3 huge temples in India, besides other temples that were being developed all over the world, publishing books, translating books from Sanskrit. I mean, he was doing so many things at the same time. It is unbelievable. But what Srila Prabhupada would teach is that if you connect with Krishna consciousness, you can also do things in your capacity that are beyond your natural abilities. Because your Krishna is like Trivikrama Maharaj was saying the other day here, that he wanted to get books in order to study how to give massage. And Prabhupada said, no, you don't need any books. You just need to do your service and Krishna will teach you. Just meditate in Krishna. Chant your rounds. And Krishna will eventually give you all the knowledge that you need. I personally have had some of that experience minutely because I was learning how to play the flute 45 years ago with a great master. And I didn't know really, but I followed the instructions. So I was learning how to play and I learned how to play in tune and learn the writers, this and that. But to truly play music, no, I couldn't really play music. But when I started playing for Lord Krishna in the temple, the devotees would invite me to play for kirtan. But I would just, actually, my favorite time when I like to play the flute is when I am by myself or I'm in a temple. When I was used to live in New Vrindavan, that was what I used to like to do, is go and play in the temple or play for the deities. And then if you play, like I would be playing for Krishna, and then all of a sudden the music would reveal itself. It's not like I studied the music, I know what the notes were, I know how you compose certain ragas, but then when you're playing for Krishna, you're just, which my teacher said, you want to get to a point, you want to practice enough so that when the music comes, you're just moving your fingers and breathing into it, but the music is going to play itself. And that's the way it is. Krishna himself can play through you. You just let yourself go and just let the music come through. That's what it is. So you can, in minute, I'm sure all of you, those who do deity worship or even make garlands for the deities or for Srila Prabhupada, they can create these beautiful garlands and beautiful decorations for Krishna, which are beyond their capabilities, really. If anybody that was not, I mean, if it was not a Krishna conscious devotee, they probably wouldn't be able to create these garlands. But there are other people that make garlands, like in Hawaii, they make garlands and this and that, but not at this level of realization. These are beautiful garlands, beautiful decorations, because the devotees, they are inspired by Krishna. So I think my time has gone beyond. I wanted to say a couple of words, but because today they said, Mahesh, you got to speak a few words about Vrindavan Das Thakur, because today is his appearance day. So I just wanted to say a few words, and I want to acknowledge that Pushkar Prabhu is here, who read the beautiful Chaitanya Bhagavat in the Hawaii, for the Hawaii Zoom Sangha, ISKCON Sangha in Hawaii. And how long did it take you to read the whole Chaitanya Bhagavat? Like 3 years? Or?
But only once a week for hours.
Yeah, once a week, every Saturday. It's every Saturday. It took like 3 years, I think, or 3.5 years. It was endless, but it was beautiful nectar. It was so amazing, the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So, just a few words about Vrindavan Das Thakur, his father passed early on, and so his mother took him to the house of Shivaj, because she was, I believe, a niece. It says here he was a niece of Shrivas Thakur. And Vrindavan Das Thakur took initiation from Nityananda Prabhu. So he was a disciple of Lord Nityananda. Very wonderful devotee. And to his, I guess, his foresight, his knowledge, his intellect, I exactly don't know who he could be in Krishna Lila, but very, very, very advanced devotee, to be able to realize that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was not just an incarnation of Vishnu. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually Krishna himself. That was what we learned from studying the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Or Chaitanya Charitamrita, actually, it is called. It was the Chaitanya Bhagavat was called the Chaitanya Mangala, but there was a disagreement because Lord Chand Das, who was a poet, had written already a poem like that, with that name. And so the pandits in Vrindavan decided to change the name to the Chaitanya, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. So in this book, he elaborates, tells the story, is divided into three sections. Same thing as the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Madhyam Lila, and Antya Lila. And tells the story of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from the point of view that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. And I couldn't really understand that for many, many years until I saw this painting once in the Honolulu Temple. I don't know who painted that painting. You know, Pushkar, there is a painting where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and there is, he's in front of
Ramananda Roy.
Yes, right. Murlidhar painted it. Beautiful painting where Krishna and Radha, they are like behind Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or coming out of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when I saw that painting, it just struck me. I was chanting my rounds right after Mongol Arti, and I just saw that painting. It's like, oh, so that is what this Chaitanya Bhagavat is about. This is who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. It's that Krishna himself in the mood of Srimati Radharani as a person. Very extraordinary. So that's probably about all the things that I can say. Pushkar, will you have anything else to say about, because you have studied quite a bit the Chaitanya Bhagavat, or anything else you would want to say about Vrindavan Das Thakur?
There's several verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita where he's glorifying and he's inspired by the book, Kaviraj Goswami. And some of the verses where he says, Are Muha Lo, all you fools, you must read the Chaitanya Mangala. Of course, it was still called Chaitanya Mangala.
That's right.
Somehow or other, maybe he didn't know about the other book. I don't know how that worked. Maybe he found him to know. But why it changed, yeah. They didn't want two books the same name, obviously. So he gave deference, because maybe he was senior Lord Chandra. But Kaviraj Goswami says, you must read that book. You can understand everything about it. You know, I'm just simply taking scraps. Whatever he didn't, I don't want to say what he said, but if there's something he left out. So that was left out meant most of the later pastime. And then the early pastime, Adi Lila, he only gave a brief, so he would quote from, obviously, Chaitanya Mangala, Bhagavad, but only briefly. And then he would expand whenever there was big gaps because Vrindavan Das wasn't aware of the later pastime. So that I can say.
Thank you. Yeah, it is true that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj refers to the Chaitanya Bhagavat as Chaitanya Mangala. And the name was changed later, I believe. That's what happened. So I don't think Krishna Das Kaviraj was aware that the name had been changed by the pandits in Vrindavan. Any other questions, comments?
Thank you, Prabhu, for this metaphor of the illusion here in the material world compared to a film. And you mentioned, though, that your instructor was telling you that on the screen we see two dimensions, whereas the reality here is three. But then, if Lord Brahma has four heads, is this four or three-dimensional world here?
It's a three-dimensional world plus time. Time is considered another dimension, right? Like when Sadaputta Prabhu said, we are going to meet on 12th and Green at 12 noon. So time is also like another dimension. That's the way it's considered. It's 3 plus 1, 4.
Oh.
But those who study Krishna consciousness, and as soon as you, or if you play an instrument like music, or you are an artist or paint, you know that there are other dimensional, there are other dimensions besides the length, width, and height, and time. There is other dimensions that the mind can relate you to. We really are living in a multidimensional world, especially those who probably dress the deities, they probably know that when they are dressing those deities, they are in another world that is in a multidimensional world, because they are doing things that they couldn't even expect. There are entities and beings that come in and out of this planet that we cannot even see. You know, like there was so much information and so much discussion about ET extraterrestrials, and I think Sadaputta also produced a book concerning the extraterrestrials from the Vedic perspective, right? So there is so many things that we cannot really see. Our eyes can only see so much, and actually they are subject to illusion. There is a lot more that is going on in this, even in this material world, that we cannot even perceive. And if you ever study music, music is really, like when I first learned how to study music, I played one note, sa, equivalent to do in the Western system, sa re ga ma pa da ni sa, so sa, for 8 hours a day for 1 year. My teacher wouldn't teach me anything else. And what happened was that when you play, I thought the only reason why I could do it was because I thought of that sa as om. Om. So when I was playing the flute sa, it was om to me. It was like I was trying to connect with that om. And even today, although I have played for 45 years and I've been teaching music for about 15 years to very serious people, very serious students, very elevated flute players, actually. And for me, that's the most important thing, is to connect with that note that is taking you to another higher realm. I can practically see when I hit the note in the perfect microtone. I mean, every note has thousands of microtones. There are many, you know, the variation between, let's say, between sa, re, between sa and re, there's hundreds of microtones. And if you don't hit the right microtone, you'll be slightly out of tune or a lot out of tune. You get a more or less professionals, like especially in the West, they more or less play in tune, but they really don't, according to our Indian ears. They almost are in tune because they are almost there, almost in tune, but not really quite. But do you understand when you are really learning how to play in tune, that called ear training, that there is so many microtones and so many tones? It's like every microtone takes you into another space, but if you're hitting the note right on that microtone that you're supposed to play, you feel like you are lifting yourself up, like you're going into another world. You're going to the planet of Indra or something. You're going to another planet, another universe, but you gotta hit it just right in tune. That's why when I teach music, it is a very hard system, because I learned this from my teacher, and my teacher didn't get it if you would become his student or not after 3 months. But if you play for that long and you focus on that tone, just the one note, eventually it takes you into another realm of consciousness. And we need to purify our... That's what we do with the chanting of the Mahamantra. Purify our existence so we can go up to another realm of consciousness. You know, elevate our consciousness.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Or should we?
Thank you, Prabhu, for that very wonderful class. You did mention that Mahavishnu came from Krishna.
Sankarshan is an expansion, yeah. Sankarshan is an expansion of Balaram, and Balaram is the first expansion from Krishna. So Krishna, Balaram,
yeah.
Sankarshan.
Actually. So, right, and Krishna, all he does is play his flute, and everything else happens automatically. That actually came from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then later on in your talk, you mentioned that you were inspired by the painting of Radha and Krishna coming out of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yes.
Now, what I'm having that trouble reconciling. How can someone 500 years ago be that Krishna, who is so all-powerful? Is that something that is going to come through realization, or is that something I can intellectually understand?
Well, in a sense, you got to understand, it is inconceivable. The potencies and the energies of Krishna is inconceivable to our little brain, in one sense. But we can get glimpses of this reality of what I'm talking about here. If you look at your own lifestyle and where you are today, where you have been, who were you 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you look at, have a little perspective on your life. And if you are able to control the senses to the point where you are following for regular, don't try to be some big person or anything, just try to know yourself so that, you know, like yesterday, Ganashyam Prabhu, who is my son-in-law, he was giving class today. I guess this is a family affair. So yesterday, he was talking about penance. But the real penance is to chant 16 rounds every day. This is the penance of this age. Chanting Hare Krishna mantra, 16 rounds every single day. Try to chant it if you can before 10 o'clock in the morning, otherwise much of nature will take you away. But if you can chant 16 rounds, it's magical. It's magic. You're chanting the names of God, and then you're purifying your existence. Cheto Darpana Marchananda. It's like, it cleanses the mirror of your heart. I mean, it is almost, like I tell Brihan, my wife, so many times, I've talked like several times already that if I wouldn't have found Krishna consciousness and Srila Prabhupada and his teachings, I would be dead today. I literally would be dead. A lot of my friends are not here today. A lot of the friends that I had in college, they are not. But I was way, way more fanatic and much more crazy than my friends. I would definitely be dead. Because I used to take so many drugs. I used to do so many crazy things in my life. So for me to go from that position where I was really a sense gratifier, someone that was into sense gratification, to the point where I am today, where, you know, I am really striving to become a better person and to avoid the sources of material misery, of misery, basically, which is sense gratification. Wow, that's a huge thing, just in my own life. So now look at every devotee that is coming to this temple. They are all at different levels of understanding and realization. So, and they are progressing. Some are children, some youth, some older people, and some of the people that are coming, like today we are going to go to St. Augustine and we are going to try to preach this Krishna consciousness. Who knows where these people are? But if they come and they take seriously this chanting of the holy names, they'll purify their existence. How? How is it possible? How? It's not, from the material point of view, it's not possible. The only thing we can think of is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give us the name and install it in the altar of our heart. He has installed a deity. There are deities here that we see and we worship. There is also a deity in our heart, in the temple of our heart, and that has been installed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's the name. Without the name, we are nobody. We are nothing. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu installed. So who could do that? Who can do that? Nobody can do that. Who could come and install
the name in the altar of your heart unless it was God himself. Who could do it? I can't imagine. It's not possible. I don't know if I make sense. I'm sorry. It's a little bit too mystical. It's like one day a devotee came to me and said, Mahesh, do you really believe that Krishna is blue and plays the flute? Well, it is mystical. It is mystical. Again, you get an
idea. So, but I try not to, because Prabhupada warned us not to mentally concoct anything.
Yes.
This is what I try to avoid. So, I don't want to ever do that. Right. I want to reach that state of realization where I can truly, it's registered in my consciousness that this is what it is, without having to mentally adjust to be that way.
Yeah, but there is the experience, right, of your own life, where you were and where you are today. And also, of course, we have the teachings, like we were reading earlier. We read quite a few verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita here and explain how, you know, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which in a sense, as he was saying, is based on the Chaitanya Mangala from Vrindavan Das Thakur, how Mahavishnu is appearing, is creating all this material phantasmagoria creation, Maya, and how he is putting the souls into the material world to live their lives so they can get these realizations that we are talking about here. So in a sense, it's something that you may not be able to see from materialistically speaking, but from the material point of view, the only thing we can see is our lives and the life of others and how other people are becoming purified in their existence. Right? And that's why we are not even against anybody else or anybody else's philosophy. It's like, well, how do they live? Like, if you come and tell me, oh, well, I believe in this and that. Well, how do you live? Who are you? What do you eat? You're a doctor? You're a medical doctor? Are you vegetarian? If the doctor tells me, no, I'm not vegetarian, then I know that, okay, well, that's nice, but I'm sorry, but I'd rather find another doctor. Because, you know, it's like, what is the reality of things? You know, what is the reality of things? First thing, I'm sorry, we're going to pass out of time.
Yeah. Well, in one sense, I mean, it's natural. We're engaging devotional service, we're engaging intelligence. I want to understand the philosophy, its different perspectives. And that's human intelligence. We frame it out. That's the glory of human life. But then the direct experience comes from purifying the heart. And you do experience it directly. Just as to whatever degree you're experiencing this directly, only more so, because it's much more reality. So the direct experience is there, but that comes from purification of the heart, but the human intelligence is meant to guide us there, or can be engaged to do so. So, you know, it's not like they're opposed to each other necessarily, or I'm thinking about it, and you know, should go in this direction or this description, but it's like a travel brochure of going to Hawaii. It kind of gives you a description, and then you actually go there and experience it. So both are possible. But unless your heart is now open to it, you never want to make a trip. I don't know if that helps.
Again, it's also by the mercy of a devotee that
we ourselves
we cannot get there, but by the mercy of a guru or a devotee that leads us there, then we can get further realization. Okay, sorry, I think we are past our time here. We need to go to some other thing. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Okay. We can do it.